Welcome to The Spoiler Zone, our brand new podcast where we spoil all the books and talk about every minute thing that happens. Our book that we're going to be talking today about is Persuasion.
By Jane Austen.
I thought that went without saying, but I guess not. So, you know, if you have not read this book and you don't want to know what happens, turn off this podcast now. I am Sarah.
I'm John.
Is that your... Manly voice?
Yeah, that's my manly voice.
I'm John.
I'm Bron.
And that's Tanea.
The giggly in one of the corners is Tanea, everyone.
This is your fault. I'm
not doing it. Don't worry, we've introduced you. It's fine.
It's too late. We've started. We're not going to go back. If you laugh for the whole of this podcast, so be it.
So the reason we did this, everyone, was because Sarah and John are lifelong Jane Austen lovers, particularly with Persuasion, and Tanea and I are Jane Austen virgins. And this was
I've
our
read
first...
Jane Austen.
Have you?
This is my fourth Jane Austen.
I didn't know that. Well, this was I was a Jane Austen
Persuasion virgin.
I love that I'm a lifelong fan. Like, I came, we came out of the womb loving this book.
Of course you did. You were drawn to Jane Austen on the shelf. You're like, ooh, this looks interesting. From a very young age. Don't break the delusion.
When did you read it first?
I read it at about 13. For my 13th birthday, actually, I got a omnibus Jane Austen, all of them. And so I read all of them then.
And is this someone you liked that gave you this?
My parents gave it to me.
Right. Someone gave me Jane Austen when I was 13. I would have thought, well, our relationship's over.
No, I loved it. You have to understand. This is why I'm so obsessed with books. It was beautiful. It had gilt pages and it was green and gold.
It
had a little ribbon so that you could mark. It was gorgeous. And, you know, and I read all of them. And I think my favorite has sort of changed over the years. But I remember... the letter at the end of Persuasion just like blowing my little heart open. and I think, you know, maybe at that age I was probably a little bit more enamored of Pride and Prejudice, but as time has gone on, the one that I return to the most often and read the most often is Persuasion. And the characters that I love the most are the characters of Persuasion.
Really?
Yeah. At 13, that's what I'm saying. I think when I read it, Persuasion wouldn't have been my favourite.
But you read it at 13?
Yes. Yeah. And also, I was 13, so, you know, you read something at 13 and it's a very different experience when you read it later. And I was reading it more as, I'm sure at that age, more as like, plot, what happens? And not really thinking much deeper than that.
Mm.
But I remember being, you know, enraptured by these tiny little encounters that happen in the book. Like, you know, when they go to Lyme and they're walking along and... William Elliot is there, and he's just some dude, and he like sees Anne and he checks her out, and like Wentworth, who you're hyper aware of, notices him checking Anne out, and it's this whole thing. I was all over that as a teenager. My God, yeah, like the minutia of like you get older and you lose the hyper awareness of those little interactions that you have at 13. My God. I was like, he looked at her, oh my God.
But see, I wonder if it's a difference because when you first read it, you didn't know how it was going to end, right?
Yeah.
Whereas I know.
I was fairly confident of how it would end. Like, it's not
but
like
you still don't know. Like, you don't know the little things. I knew things. Like, I knew there was a letter. I knew about Lyme.
I knew there was a letter as well. I was just waiting for the letter. And then I was like, what if I'm disappointed in the letter? Because you guys always go on about the letter.
But I got a text from Tanea when she got up to the letter.
It was like, oh my God, the letter.
And then I looked at my phone screen. It was sitting on my coffee table, and from the corner of my eye, I saw, "You pierce my soul." I'm half agony and half hope, and I'm like, "She's there. She's reading the letter."
Quote on the back of my edition of this book as well. It's very fitting. My feels
oh my
in the book.
God.
we thought it was interesting that you didn't think it was very romantic up until that
point. It wasn't necessarily that. I think it was because both of you told me and Bron. That it's like the most romantic Austen. It's one of the most romantic books ever. So I went into it, I think, expecting more romance, but also like, wasn't romantic. It's a different type of romantic though. Like
it depends on your definition of romance, because to me, it's so romantic the whole way through. It's all about how she feels about him. Like the whole book, and there's lots of other things going on. And we could talk for ages about, like, you know, the classes at that time you know, what a good marriage is and what it means to,
but
like,
we're not
have
going
pride.
To.
We could, and I will at the drop of a hat. But basically, to me, this is a love story, and it's a really intense, beautiful one, and it's a character study because the whole question is like, okay, here's an interesting question. And also, we forgot the point of spoiler zone, which was that we are supposed to tell the plot at the beginning for anyone who is. I don't want to read Persuasion, but I want to know what it's about.
Sarah, you do the spoiler zone plot for us.
Should we?
Or just go onto Wikipedia for a really extensive overview.
Very briefly, it's just about a man and a woman that used to be in love. And
8 years ago. Anne and
Wentworth.
Frederick,
I just call him Wentworth.
I forgot his name was Frederick.
And he signs the letter Wentworth. FW.
Yeah, but I just...
The words of that letter are ingrained on my soul.
Clearly.
So Anne and Wentworth are in love, but they don't. Anne's family doesn't think that he's good enough, so she breaks off the engagement.
She's persuaded
to break up with him. Many years later, he's made a name for himself. He's now a captain, right? Comes back and... basically, they start to fall in love all over again, or realize that they never actually stopped loving each other, and it's a happy ending.
Yeah,
well, that's a really basic plot.
It's if you love an unrequited love story, but you don't like the way it ends, this is that.
It's unrequited.
You pretty much have an unrequited love story right at the bit where the end, and you get all happiness.
Yeah, that's,
it's like no jokes. It is required.
Yeah, exactly, because that's how it felt. It feels like
it does.
Yeah, the whole way through, it's just not going to happen.
So when you read it the first time, did you think it was going to end bad? You have a great story the first time.
I remember telling you guys in the podcast. I mean, I was 18. I was a tough guy living in London with, you know, working late and trying to be really cool. And I was in this flat with this guy who was a complete and utter nerd and had all the books lining the walls and the rest of it, and he sort of convinced me to try this whole reading thing. And one of the books he gave me was Persuasion. And I'm like, what a girl's book, are you kidding me? And anyway, so I sat down and I had a day off, so I sat down and read it. And when he got home from work, he found me half in between moving between getting my cup of tea, which was on a coffee table too far away, and I was on my knees reading the book, arm reached out for the coffee, for the cup of tea that was in front of me.
Do you know if it was coffee or tea?
No, it was tea. It was tea because it was England. Obviously. It was a coffee table with a tea. That's where the confusion came. You know, I'm sitting there and it's right up where you know, they're...
Obviously something's happened, you've stopped.
Yeah, I'm stopped halfway because it's like I can't move and stop this scene.
The end of that book.
And he comes in and finds me like that, and I just turned to him and said,
what's going to happen?
Does she find him? Do they get together? Like, he's like, oh my God, John, that one book's changed you.
I feel like it's so fraught with tension at the end of that book because honestly, like, it's taken them so long to get to this point.
Mm.
He's written that letter in the same room
as her
and walked away.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh my God, how's she going to find him? Like, how will she catch up? People keep stopping her from leaving the room and stuff. And I'm like,
just push
and then him. And I do remember having this like little fear that he was going to, you know, get hit by a carriage or something.
We'd have a Romeo and Juliet moment where you've just missed.
Yeah, because it just seems like she's so good at drawing it out. Like, she's amazing at drawing it out from the second so the question I was going to ask is, do you come away from Persuasion feeling as though Anne was right to have
rejected him
when she was younger or not?
I don't judge her for it because I understand, you know, peer pressure and people persuading you
and times were very different back then,
and it is all about, you know, advantageous marriages and things like that, and it wasn't just about her, it was about the whole family, and what you do reflects poorly on your whole family and your sisters and all that kind of stuff. So I never judged her for it. It was kind of one of those things that I felt a bit like, oh, you missed all these years, you could have been together. But
are they the same people though?
I think at the same time, you grow as a person, and 8 years is a long, long time,
but also 8 years
off in the war,
the war, but also of disappointment as well, so there's that aspect of it, which changes people like that
relationship had it good with him,
but also feeling that she'd given in to the persuasion.
Yes.
So that would be a mark against her character and a mark against the character. There's a lot of maturity that goes on in this book, and it is the most mature of her books. If you look at the other ones, the decisions and the way in which Anne lives her life and the choices she makes, we're meeting her after this. So we're sort of coming to her as she's matured, as she's come to grips with maybe never being married, as she's come to grips with I know what love is, I stuffed it, but I'm so happy I had it. And she, you know, is moving, she's moving on, you know, and so she's concentrating on family. She's being ridiculously patient with a whole lot of morons.
Oh, my God, right.
You know, and we you know, it's, I think it's just marvellous the way she handles people, because in earlier books, the heroines are kind of a little bit...
immature?
No, they're a bit...
headstrong.
I don't know, there's a bit of sarcasm in the way they deal with the people that maybe they don't think are the same kind of quality or the same, have the same kind of intelligence or sensitivity or empathy. Mm-hmm. Well, Anne is not like that. Anne, you never feel that sense that she's laughing at anyone. While in other books you get that sense that she's...
I equate her a lot with Eleanor from Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they've got that same sterling quality.
Something different, though.
Oh, what?
Well, the thing, Eleanor, there's a spark to Anne, which I think that if she's looking back, if Jane Austen's looking back at her other novels and looking at these characters, because I think there's, my theory about Jane Austen is there's a lot of Eleanor and a lot of Anne in her, but there's also Mary Crawford in her.
Right? I see that.
And so I think there's more, a sprinkle more of Mary Crawford into the Anne mixture than there
and
was in the...
And it comes out in the course of the book so much, because when you begin this book, she's like, she's been trapped there with her dad and her idiot sisters.
Oh, I hate...
And like...
And Elizabeth? Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Mary.
Mary's
Elizabeth.
Got some comic valley, really valley to it.
Elizabeth's I'm keen just, for a Mary conversation, but continue.
Yeah, we'll have back to get to Mary. Mary's fine. But so she's been trapped there. She hasn't done much traveling. She's just had 8 years to kind of regret. I totally flipped my point. What were we talking about? Her sparkle and stuff. So, and then, not because Wentworth comes back. It's more than that. She goes to Bath. Like, they're forced out of Kellynch Hall and they're forced to, like, expand her world a little bit. And she meets all of these Captain Wentworth's friends and widens her circle and she's out in the fresh air and she just blooms.
There's opportunity
and
for wit.
Yeah. And she's an opportunity to help people besides her idiot father. Yeah. Like, she helps Benwick and she helps, like, the Musgroves, and you start to see how she's viewed by other people, you know, when they say, I think, it's the Musgrove sisters who are like, Anne was going to marry their brother, but then instead he married
Yes,
Mary,
and they were like, we wish
no,
it
right?
had been, that yeah, yeah, we wish it had been Anne, I think they say at one point.
Yeah, and I love that journey where you start this book and the way that Anne is presented to you is like, oh, it's so sad, she's lost all of her bloom,
yeah.
You know, she's not pretty, she's not young anymore, which is hilarious because I think she's like 27, right?
Yeah.
So like... Everyone, so that's the Anne you're presented with, and it's kind of through other people, and then gradually, as she gains confidence throughout the novel, that you just see that change, and I love it.
Yeah,
I love it so much. I adore this book. The more I talk about it, the more I realize how much.
You
I
have like
it.
This big smile. You've got you
I
as
really
well.
Do.
Like, big smile.
And I really planned on reading it right before this podcast, so it would be super fresh in my mind. But I realize it's super fresh in
my mind.
I was going to say,
you remember more than I do, and I read it a few months ago. But I
have read it multiple times.
I'm sort of, I can't remember the names of a lot of people.
That's what I said to Sarah earlier. Mm. I was like, look, I loved it, but towards the end, I started to like lose track of people. Like, I think the more I was into it, and like the more I was like, I can't put this book down, the more I was like, not keeping track of names and people and relationships.
And Sinead came out to me and said that this morning, because I was like, I didn't get a chance to reread it. I've forgotten all the side characters' names. And Janae's like, yeah, I got a bit confused as well. Like, I couldn't remember who the... And he started trying to say something, and I was like, oh,
last
the Harvards.
Page.
And then you got
last
the Musgroves and the Crofts, and it all just spilled out.
She knew it all. I was like, okay.
It's like your own family tree.
It's in
I
there.
Know who these are.
I forgot that it was in there, but it is.
So my thing with Persuasion, and I think I come back to it, so I often refer to Anne Elliot as my moral guide. Because she, out of all the different people, whether it be Buddha, Jesus, all that lot. To me, it's Anne Elliot. The way in which she balances life and the way she deals with decisions and the things of the heart, but also being kind and empathetic, but being able to balance it out so that she doesn't give all over to other people. She leaves a little bit for herself, gives on the back burner, and then when it's time, when she finally does get it, she can go fully into the relationship. So she's not completely burnt out as a person having... It's a wonderful balance she has. She's got a real sense of self, but she also has a great understanding of others around her. Really good understanding.
Because it would be easy to sort of view her character as... Because she was persuaded in the beginning, and because of the way she's sort of drawn in the beginning of being kind of a weak character or timid. And I think even Wentworth, when he's going on and on within earshot of her at some point in the novel about what it takes to be, like, about preferring a resolute character and someone with strength of will and blah, blah, blah. And, like, every word he says is just, like... and he's going on and on like that. That is what... She is like that, but she's like that in a real true quiet way where she's not when it matters, she'll stand up to her family, and when it comes down to it,
and in crisis,
she's not gonna
It's just a wonderful strength in her character, and you know that makes her so attractive to the other people around, because she's reliable and she's trustworthy and she's honest. There's all these things that you just but she's not Eleanor. Like, Eleanor gets on my nerves a little bit. Because there's a bit more
too... She's a little bit too martyrish sometimes, do you feel? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's where the balance comes better in Anne. So
because she denied herself in a big way in the beginning of the book.
But she was very young. And this is a book about age too. It's so much about age.
And this is what I was going to say is whether or not you think she made a mistake in the past. That changed for me over the years, because as a young girl, I read it and it was... so unfair of Lady Russell to have done that to her. What a villain. And, like, I hope she lived to regret all of her mistakes. And Anne was this victim, because when you're 13, your parents control your whole life and it doesn't really occur to you. Like, it's just so unfair that this happened. And then as you sort of get older, like, I've changed my mind on that. I think that if she had accepted him then and they'd been cut off from her family and he had not a penny to live with, he'd gone off to war, leaving her... Because she would have been cut off from her family, right? Her dad said, if you do this, I'll not do a thing for you. She would have probably died in poverty, and then they would have never had any life together. Or, you know, or any number of things could have happened.
Well, they may not have been mature enough to understand each other. Or, then, you know, men take a long time, in my own personal experience. A long time to come to it.
And, like, even at the end or at some point in the novel, I'm sure, doesn't he ask her, like, what would you have done if I'd come back 2 years after, you know, 2 years after she said no to him, if I'd come and asked you again, what would you have done? And she'd been like, I'd have said yes. And so it's kind of like she did the right thing at that time. And it's as much sort of his fault as her fault that they spent 8 years apart, because he had too much pride to go back and ask again once he'd got on his feet.
I think it's also interesting because, like, the whole, like, you know, what if you had said yes when she was, 19, 18, whatever the age it was. Just because what happened by her saying no happened, if she'd said yes, it could have been completely different. Like, it kind of is, like, this whole
it
idea that,
follow.
Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that all the same decisions are always going to happen. One thing can change so many things. So it kind of, to me, is just, like, you know, that's what she decided. Like, I don't want to think about...
Well, and she wouldn't be Anne. She wouldn't be Anne if she'd thrown caution to the winds and be like, screw you, family, I'm running away. That's not her. She's got that family pride, and that she's pretty much the only one in her family who gives a damn about the house and the family history. Mm. Like, for all that, the dad brings out that book and keeps reading about the baronetcy and stuff. Like, it's just like it's his favorite book, and he's always bringing it out to be like, look how amazing we are. They don't seem to really, once the initial embarrassment of renting out their house is over, they plop themselves in Bath and they're totally happy with their little amusements. They don't have any sense of shame that they couldn't hold the family estate. That's all Anne. Anne's the only one who really feels it. She's the only one with any real honor. She's the only one who has the real kind of... I'm doing it again.
Oh,
I'm just
in love with Anne. You're championing her. Oh, my God.
I can't really do this, guys. I'm feeling really emotional.
Can we talk about Mary then?
Yes,
I'll talk about Mary.
Okay, let's talk about Mary. So, like, from, like, what? I think I was halfway through it, and you're all like, how are you doing? And I was like, I love Mary. But I also equally hate Mary because she is a bit ditzy. But the comedic value of Mary is brilliant. Like, I'm just going to repeat, I've told you all this, and you can just listen to it again. But there is a part where Mary's son injures himself and dislocates his shoulder. And Mary, the lovely hypochondriac that she is and obsessor over things, is like, my poor son, we need to stay and look after him. And then her husband Charles is like, nah, I'm going to go to dinner instead. And then Mary's like, well, if you don't care, I no longer care. I'm going to go to dinner. Hey, Anne, look after my son. Great. Great conversation. I just loved it so much. He made me laugh so much.
She is such a classic Austin character.
Like, I love Mary.
So ridiculous. So.
Oh, I don't think I would, though.
Do you think she's true to life?
I think there are people like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
It's exaggerated. I don't know. You would hope, but.
I feel like, as you guys, you've all found her quite comical, right?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, maybe part of my soul is dead that you all have, because I had such intolerance for her. I couldn't stand it. Every time she made a comment, I was like, shut up, Mary.
I think that's the reaction you're kind of meant to have. But I didn't find it funny, though.
Like, you kind of said it was funny, and then, but you hate it at the same time. If I had read this book sooner,
I probably would have hated her. I think I've read enough of Austin now, and I feel like I've read enough things that I could appreciate.
I guess that's how you like. You might
definitely more with brother.
Really?
Well,
yeah. Oh, thank you.
I loved her.
No, I haven't. I didn't love her, but I found a lot of comedy in it. That sense it of the like, ridiculous, because it's almost like the any which way that she can find to like insert herself in the world and have an opinion contrary to something she may have said 5 minutes earlier, and. I just find it's ridiculous.
She reminded like me of Lydia in Pride and Prejudice.
She reminded me more of Mrs. Bennet. Lydia's
A bit of both.
A coquettish kind of character, both whereas Mary's
horrible. Mrs. Bennet and Lydia were both like, shh.
She reminded me a little bit of the. I think it's the mom in Mansfield Park as well. Mansfield Park is not my favorite, but the mom in that is like an invalid, and she's got lap dogs and stuff, and she's so. There's just something really comical to me about that. And you can just... And because it doesn't bother Anne, it doesn't bother me.
I think between the two sisters, Mary and Elizabeth, Mary was, like, to me, I was like, I can deal with you. Elizabeth, on the other hand, I was like, oh, my gosh, this girl. She was more painful to me.
Yeah, she's
She wasn't funny. She was annoying.
But I didn't find Elizabeth as troublesome because I felt Mary was more of a...
Well, she wasn't in it as much.
Well, Mary was more of a... some kind of a... I don't know. Ball and chain around.
Yeah, she hovered. She didn't let go.
She never seemed to really. Anne would just roll her eyes.
I know, this is why Anne's so wonderful. Yeah. Is that, you know, and that's and the like, lesson.
It's just Mary.
That relationship is part of the main lesson of the book, you know, of how to act. Because family is family. You've got to put up with them. Yeah. You've got to work with them in the best way you can. And Anne just has this wonderful way of balancing that.
I also find it interesting how the three daughters are so completely different. Like, and completely different.
Yeah, but if you have a big family.
I don't know. Mary and Elizabeth are kind of cut from the same cloth, and I feel like their circumstances are what makes their characters different. So she's living in with her little family, married and a mother, and that's why she's gone that way, whereas Mary's swanning around as like the most beautiful daughter and not married and just gets to gaze in mirrors all day or whatever. Then she's got a little bit more pomp and to her personality, but I think they're basically made of the same stuff.
There always seems to be, I mean, one of these really annoying characters. Do we think that there was someone in Jane Austen's life who was like this?
I think there are many people like
that. Her parents?
Her family, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I always like to think that maybe her mum was like Mrs. Bennet. You know, just psychotic.
No, everyone's life, there are people who just speak all the time and they have nothing to say, and I think they're the ones in mind like Jane Austen, you just go thank you
say like Mrs. Bates in Emma,
yeah just write it all down. Miss Bates.
Didn't even get married.
What do you think of when I think of Persuasion, and it could be because of the initial edition I had was this dark and stormy cover of Penguin, right? In my brain it's so dark. Like even when I look at Mary's house, it's a dark house. Like I don't know how you guys read it.
Maybe
like
the atmosphere.
I read it as very grey and washed out colours. Yes. Grey and misty.
Yeah.
That's what I pictured. Especially Lyme, because you mean the beaches in England are just...
Yeah, you just imagine like this like, rocky shore. And,
exactly. Yeah, and that huge thing they walk out on, the pier. The pier, what is it called? It's famous. It's Lyme Regis, for Christ's sake. But anyway, it's a big stone wall. Surf break that goes out.
Stormy, sort of dull blue sea.
I remember seeing that for the first time in one of the movies that they made. One of the movie adaptations of Persuasion, like one from
I need to rewatch that now.
I was going to say, you just reminded me, I can go watch all the Persuasion adaptations now, because before, like, until I've read it, I'm not going to do that to myself, but now I can do it.
Yeah, see, I remember the moment when I first saw a movie version of Persuasion and I saw that thing. And I had to rearrange my head because I'd imagined it very differently. Mm. I was like, oh, that's what they're talking about. Like, I just had it in my mind that there was an ocean and then there was a little, like, a stone wall, and that's what Eloisa jumped off.
That's exactly what I'm picturing.
I didn't picture it properly in my head. Dumb. And then when I saw it for the first time.
That's it.
The cob?
Yeah.
No, that is it. I remember that now.
Yeah, wow, God.
I think one of the funny things about Persuasion is that when you, it sort of builds up to that, like the first kind of dramatic thing that happens is when Louisa falls, and that's kind of.
Oh, can I just say that? So cringeworthy, stupid. I was like, what are you doing?
And like Tanea pointed out to me last time I said fall, she's like, Sarah, she didn't fall, she jumped. And I'm like, you're right.
She jumped. She's an idiot.
She jumped the first time and was like, oh my God,
Freddy, catch me.
And then was like, once isn't enough, let's go back for seconds. And learn her lesson.
Shameless flirting.
Learn her lesson.
I do love how easy it is to die in the 19th century.
You know? I also love how like the concussion changed her so much, and I'm like, don't really feel like that happens these days.
Well, maybe they classed it as a concussion, but it was actually probably frontal lobe. Yeah.
I just like to think that she fell in love and calmed down a bit. Oh.
Well, obviously, like, she seriously injured herself and had jumped and was like, well, now I can't be fun. I'm going to be serious about not jumping anymore because jumping hurts.
I think she was just embarrassed. I mean, she really humiliated herself.
Do you reckon Jane Austen could have written a story where the people are just married?
Well,
oh, I know.
I think she could have. Because one thing I remember, a later reread, I remember thinking that the Crofts in this book have such a progressive marriage. Like, they talk about how she's always on the boat with him and how they, and she, like, takes over the reins for him when they're driving, and they have this real kind of equality in their marriage that wouldn't have been common at that time. And that, like, sort of, I remember thinking that that was actually pretty cool, and I would have loved if she had written a book kind of like that. I feel like that's what she's saying Anne and Wentworth's marriage would be like, you know, like that's kind of an example of
quality.
Yeah, like that they would not just be, and you know, maybe that's another good thing that they waited 8 years, because now they can meet a little bit more equally and have more of that equal marriage than they would have had if they'd been young idiots. I don't know. I just
young idiots.
Yeah. I just, and also the Gardeners in Pride and Prejudice have this like cool kind of marriage. Like, it's always, it's never the main characters.
But there's always some sort of,
because she has plenty of bad marriages and she shows you plenty of horrific marriages. But she also, and we never get to see really the marriages of our main characters, because it's always like rounds things up before we get to see that. But there's always somewhere around an example of a marriage that works, and probably the kind of marriage she might have wanted to have.
Yeah, I'm reading it again now. The focus on the marriages, like all of her books, the focus on the marriages off camera.
Yeah, just the ones on the side. Who I'm like, to be honest with you, this stuff is coming out of me.
Don't say anymore. I think we should write a book about the marriages of Jane Austen. Yeah.
I just don't even know where this stuff comes from. I seriously thought I'd forgotten so much of this book, but the minute I start talking about it, it all just
it's
tumbles
ingrained
out.
In you, Sarah. Yeah.
So how often have you read it since 13?
Persuasion, probably not as often as Jane Eyre. Jane Eyre is about once a year. But I think maybe that's a mistake. Maybe I need to switch that out. Probably like maybe 6 or 7 times.
Right.
Okay.
And sometimes guys.
Sometimes it's like one. I just want to read the end. So sometimes I just read the end.
And, I mean, fair.
Or just watch the movie.
Or I go from the concert. You know that concert where it's like, please talk to each other. And then he leaves in a huff because he's all jealous. And you're like, no. That's what I love, is all of the like.
Like when they do talk and then the cousin comes and sits behind her and like
takes her away.
And it's like
she maneuvers herself closer to Wentworth.
That's when you want to kill Elliot. You're just like, no, the cousin Elliot was William. I was like, just no, go away. Let them have their conversation.
This is the stuff that I love. It is so hard for them because they can't just call each other up.
Yeah.
They can't just text each other.
It's so hard for them to get time alone. Like, oh my God, how much do you want to just like fall at the feet of, I think it's Harville at the end. He's like, I I've got an errand to run. Do you mind if you just take Anne home? I'm like, you legend. You've given them time alone? Like,
we've read it that many times. I've read it 5 times. Every time I read it, I'm the same guy on his knees wanting them to get together.
That's not a great point, though.
What?
At what point are you on your knees?
It's right. It's just before the final scene where, you know, when it's like, come on, people.
Yeah, I was getting to that point towards the end. I was like, oh, my God. It just
when hurry, he drops the pencil, he drops the pencil, and it's just like, oh, my God, he's listening. Like, every time.
I like when he comes back in to, like, to put the letter on the table and then, like, walks back out. And he's like, just like and then dashes. Like, I can't watch this. Could you imagine being in that situation? Being like, what the hell?
Passing notes in class. Jeez.
Oh, my Lord.
Let's go read it.
Yeah. That's all good. I really want to. Okay, so... that's the end of our spoiler zone podcast on Persuasion. I feel like we could probably go for several more hours, but we won't do it to you. And if you wanted to buy Persuasion or any of Jane Austen's books, you could do that at www.booktopia.com.au.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.